RandomChatter.com presents
Oliver Queen,
an Arrow podcast.
Now I will fulfill my father's dying wish.
Dedicated to the discussion of the Arrow television series.
Bring down those who are poisoning my city. To do this, I must become someone else. I must become
Green Justice. Welcome back, everybody, to Green Justice, an Arrow podcast. I'm your host, Jay.
And I'm Josh.
And you've discovered the number one podcast dedicated to the CW television show Arrow, with discussion and commentary on all the various episodes. We've got another really interesting episode of Arrow this week. A lot of internal commentary, turmoil, vigilantes, wrestling, and lots of arrows, actually. This is
arrows, choreography, fights, slow motion, dramatic, foggy effects.
That is, yeah, there's, I'm surprised they didn't actually play like the WWE theme at one point in the background as Oliver walks slow-mo through the exploding pyrotechnic display behind him and everything.
Yeah, so. I was a little surprised no chairs were used at all in any of the fights.
No chairs were injured in this making of this episode. So, all right, well, let's get started on this because there's definitely a bunch of stuff we want to talk about. So, one, two, three, four.
No. I'm not going to do it again. That's too much in 1 week. We're going to keep the singing down to a minimum.
Rest the pipes. Okay.
As tempting as it is, I'm going to.
Is it really tempting?
It's really tempting, actually. Okay. I enjoy it quite a bit. really just to see what kind of reactions I can get from people. But it's fun. It's fun. No, actually, we'll just go ahead and straight tell you what this one is about, because there's so much going on and so much action that we don't got time for singing.
Who's got time for that?
We don't have time for that. All right. No, this episode was the third episode in season 5 on October 19th, 2016, and it was called A Matter of Trust. All right, the bad guy was Billy Joel in this one. He got all angry and started throwing stuff
throwing at pianos
Oliver.
Around.
Yeah, he went in and he was so mad at the mayor. Oh, no, that was the DA. That wasn't Billy Joel, was it? Anyway, it was directed by Gregory Smith. But who do you trust? You trust your family?
Sure.
Maybe your friends?
Yeah.
Teammates?
Absolutely. Yeah.
The media?
Oh, no, those lying dogs.
Yeah, no. Your own eyes. How about that? Do you trust your own eyes?
These are questions
sometimes you have to answer, okay? Especially when you're a vigilante and the mayor. Oliver, he's trying to find out who's been dealing a new drug called Stardust.
Whoa.
In Star City.
Oh, that was cool. Did you hear that? That was neat.
Stardust. And he's hot on the trail, man, but he's not gonna let his new team help him out. They're just going to observe, right? It's it's the think system, I think. He's trying to train them with the think system. He's just, just watch
the and think
you'll
figure system.
It out. I guess, yeah.
I was going to say, does that stand? Is it the T-H-I-N-K? Does that stand for
No. You just think about what you would do,
oh.
And then you learn it. I think that's really all he's letting them do.
Oh, like a teacher.
Yeah. It's the old Music Man Harold Hill system of learning music. But, he just can't trust him. He just does. It's just not there. Something about it. Maybe the fact that, they don't do what he says and they lie to him. But the feeling might be mutual, see, because Wild Dog and Evelyn Sharp, they go out on their own. They actually find the guy that they've been looking for, this dealer named Samson, Derek Samson.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad they, accidentally knocked him into a big, giant, glowing vat of stardust and created a new superhuman bad guy.
My bad.
Yeah. Oops. Hey, plus, Oliver's getting a lot of pressure about some decisions that Thea's made, especially when it concerns Quentin Lance. And the media is having a field day with these new blunders. So Oliver's going to have to learn to trust that Thea can clean up her own mess, and he's going to have to trust his team to be able to take care of themselves and do the job he was training them for. And it's good timing, too, because Diggle's in jail, and he's seeing dead adversaries, and he's in need of a lot of help, so let's hope Oliver can fit saving the day once again into his busy schedule.
Wow. Was that an actual quote from the episode, saving the day once again, like the return to the scene of the crime sort of thing?
Yeah.
Very nice. Yeah. There's definitely some trust issues going on in this issue, in this episode, I mean. And what I meant to do when I watched it again was to actually count the number of times that they mentioned trust. I doubt you happened to do that.
I didn't count it, no, but it was a lot. It was a lot. And even when they didn't say the actual word, it was implied.
All right, so before we get into the some of the discussion topics here, a couple pieces of news. First one, you may have heard about some of this on our other podcast that we do, but Entertainment Weekly has a new double issue. That's what you'd call it. And they have a story where they are ranking the most powerful superheroes. What's on the cover of this one again, Josh?
Well, on the cover is a big glowing picture of hunky man Benedict Cumberbatch.
Bandersnoot Cumberbatch, yep.
That's the one, right there. And he is dressed all in dramatic, sexy clothes. And I think he might be playing a Khan, maybe? No, Doctor Who? No, but it is a doctor.
It is a doctor.
It's a doctor. Doctor Strange, I think.
He's in that new movie, Doctor Strange.
I'm excited about this movie, actually. I'm looking forward to seeing that. Different franchise, but still looks like a good movie. Heard some good buzz. But what the double issue is really focusing on is the 50 most powerful superheroes. So it's another list. Lists are very big.
Big lists.
But they have made this list a little bit different. It's not just a internet survey where fans write in and vote or something like that. Instead, they've come up with a system where you can rank them based on different characteristics, and then they add up the total number of those characteristic totals with and rank them by that. So I'm not actually sure who it was that scored them. I think it was just Entertainment Weekly writers and things like that. But
yeah, that's I thought there was like a really, really tiny disclaimer down at the bottom. Yeah. So I don't know where they came up with their list, because, you know, there's some of the characters on there that I don't know I would consider superheroes, like Nick Fury. He's a comic book character, but not necessarily a superhero. Buffy the Vampire Slayer is on there.
Yeah.
I guess you could kind of consider her a superhero, but you know, so there's this mix of stuff, but the reason we wanted to bring it up is because Oliver Queen, Green Arrow, shows up at number 25, very nice spot, right there in the middle.
Yeah, yeah, he got a total number of 64 on the 100-point scale. So I'm glad they put him that high up, because that character has really, really started a boom for DC superheroes. And I'm not even just going to say on TV. I'm going to say just in general.
I think he kind of did jumpstart the new live action franchise, you know, which includes the TVs and the movie.
Yeah, for sure. So I definitely think he has it. That would, I suppose, be the modern relevance category, which he scored high in, and that caused him to jump up on the list there quite high. And if you look in the back of that, all the little descriptions of each superhero that they have, they tell you what they scored exactly in each ranking. You can find out, you know, which one was their highest one, whether it was cultural impact, modern relevance, mythology, nemesis, things like that.
Design.
Oh yeah. That's a really good one.
And, just as a benchmark here, Hawkeye, who is the Marvel, Archer, based off of Green Arrow, you know, as you could probably argue that he is. He ranked 49 on the list.
Yeah.
So
I'm okay with that. You know, I mean, I don't think he has had quite the impact as Green Arrow has.
Green Arrow's definitely been around longer, probably about 25 years longer, I think, or so, maybe.
Yeah,
maybe
but
20.
Even so, just in the modern era. I mean, he was cool in the Avengers movies. He's been cool in the movies, but that specific character hasn't done what this Green Arrow character has done by creating these other franchises like Flash and Legends of Tomorrow and that kind of thing.
And so, Green Arrow has been around in other aspects. Like, he is, you know, you could, if you were to say, hey, who's that Archer for the Justice League? People might know Green Arrow. And, you know, now I think since the Avengers movie, people know Hawkeye, but you know, what, like 4 years ago, people probably didn't know Hawkeye. Like right now, probably a lot of people don't know who Doctor Strange is or who Iron Fist is, as those things are coming out. So, yeah, I thought this was a really nice way to put together the list. And so you guys can check out in the current issue of Entertainment Weekly, which should be on stands because it's a double issue. It should be on stands all next week as well.
That's right.
And then do you have another story here from Entertainment Weekly? Did you find this in the same issue?
I actually just found this online, but it was Entertainment Weekly that was reporting it out. Apparently, they have revealed, the executive producers have revealed, when Oliver is going to find out about Felicity's boyfriend. And interestingly, I haven't really thought about that too much. We may have mentioned it the very first week about whether he knew about the boyfriend or not. Uh-huh. But then after that, I kind of stopped thinking about whether he did or not. But, you know, not a huge news story, but it is important because, of course, the relevance to the lies that the characters continue to tell each other in this series and how much it affects everybody.
Even though they're trying to be more honest with each other.
They are. And, you know, I'm Felicity, I don't know. And they even kind of mentioned this. I don't know that she's been keeping it a secret, hiding it from him. I don't. It's just,
yeah, she's just
really
not
come
talking
up.
About it. So.
Yeah. I mean, she didn't just go up and reveal to like she did to Rory at the end of this episode. You know,
right,
she hasn't done that. So, yeah, we'll see how that works. I'm kind of hoping it's not a huge deal. I think you need to address it in a realistic way, but I don't know. I mean, I think he kind of needs to move on, and I think he kind of has. That was what that one episode was about, either last week or the week before. I don't remember, but just kind of getting on, moving on from what was the old to what is the new. So
right. Well, and this week there was one scene with Detective Malone. That's the guy that now they didn't identify him as Felicity's boyfriend. We just know that he was a cop that.
No, he didn't. So he got called Green Arrow. He got his attention, right?
Yeah.
He didn't go, I'm Detective Malone and Felicity's boyfriend.
Well, no, but I mean, just to remind, well, I guess it was in the opening previously on where they might have shown you a scene with Felicity and him. I'm just saying to the audience, just to remind who he is. You know, so there was a little bit of that, and we had a little bit of information, you know, moving on the Prometheus plot line, but.
I think this would be an appropriate time because you mentioned the previously on, right?
Yeah.
I found that very fascinating this week.
On The Flash and Arrow, that one?
Yeah. First of all, they had The Flash on there.
Had to. Yeah, they have to address that. Yeah.
They do have to address it, but I don't know that they really addressed anything specifically in this episode of the show.
They did. So yeah, let's get that out of the way then. When Diggle's in prison, and he's talking, he was on the phone. It's when they were at the little call window.
Okay.
And Lila comes to talk to him, and then you know the police are like, "No, you can't keep talking anymore," or whatever, and they're pulling
him
away.
Yeah, they gave him what, like 15 seconds? Jeez, come on. Yeah,
well, it took her forever to get through security, and you know, there's you know. The inmates have license plates to make. but he's like, give my love to John Jr. And that, you know, I mean, that is the extent of it, which is supposed to be explained by the previously on or having you watched Flash, you know, but that's.
Wow, do you really think that's all they're going to do? Is that it? Is that's what they're going to give us and no more explanation?
They're going to mention stuff about John Jr., but I mean, there's no explanation to give on the show, really. Because, like, none of the characters know. Oh, Felicity knows. I guess there might be something later where Felicity says, oh, yeah, by the way, Barry kind of screwed some stuff. But I'm guessing at the crossover, maybe they'll mention something, but I don't know.
That's interesting. I mean, I guess it's fine. I guess, I don't know. I guess it's okay. What are they going to say? I mean, I don't know that they can say anything that would change my feelings about it, but at first I thought I had forgotten about that one line there, and he did mention that, although they wouldn't have had to. But and then I was thinking that they maybe just kind of threw it in there because of Deadshot, and maybe that's how they were going to explain him being around. But then I learned that obviously wasn't the case later on. So Anyway, I just found the previously on interesting for that point, but also there were a lot of older scenes from quite a while back in the series.
Multiple seasons, yeah. As I mentioned on our Scarlet Velocity episode yesterday, that these previously on, I used to just kind of skip or not pay attention to because, you know, it's like I'm paying attention, obviously. I mean, we're doing a podcast about these, but there's so much history going on, and Arrow is drawing back upon four seasons, so there's stuff that they want to point out to you that is important. For, I mean, whatever is in previously on is important for that episode. It'll give you a clue to, like, what's going to happen.
What they're going to tie it to.
Exactly, right. So, you know, if, Moira is going to show up, you know, they'll have a flashback with, like, her getting killed, and you'll be like, okay, that's weird, so why are they reminding us of that? You know, things like that. So, mm-hmm. These are actually getting much more important, and they're actually changing. I want to say there was something slightly different about the intro reading this week as well, but maybe it's just from the previous seasons. No,
it could be. They do every once in a while. They do change those, either the scenes or what is actually said.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I know they've changed the scenes out, but and I know they've changed what he says because, you know, just like we realized, I think it wasn't until the third season, because we're so observant, that they actually changed the arrowhead in the opening titles.
Did it take us that long, really?
I remember knowing, I mean, I remember third season going, oh my God, that's completely different. And it probably was the first episode because it was that big ornate arrowhead that looked like League of Assassins arrowhead. And then I was like, oh, well, you know what? Maybe they did that for season two. And then I went back and I was like, oh, yeah, that's totally different. And they have changed the arrowhead every season. We've got screenshots up at our Facebook page over at Green Justice Pod. Yep.
And so, including when Cupid was around and also the Flash crossover.
The Flash variation of it, yeah, at facebook.com/Green Justice Podcast. Green Justice Pod's our Twitter, so that's why. All right, well, as I... or I guess as you mentioned at the top of the show, the title is of the episode is taken from a Billy Joel song. Now you could say it's a coincidence because A Matter of Trust is sort of a phrase, but Mark Guggenheim, besides being a huge fan of Wise Guy, is also a big Billy Joel fan and a Bruce Springsteen fan. So there have been a number. There have been two. Previous episodes that are Billy Joel titles as well. Episode 414, which was called Code of Silence, and reaching all the way back to 104, An Innocent Man. So, but it was cool. It gave me a chance to watch that Billy Joel video again, which I hadn't seen in like 25 or 30 years or something like that.
Oh, wow.
And I'm like, oh my God, I totally remember this with the guy doing like the pop locking out in the street to the music and stuff. I'm like, it's bizarre when you go back and you watch videos from, like, you know, when you were a teenager watching MTV. It's amazing how many of these weird little visual image, you know, all the visual imagery that you had at the time like sticks with you. Like there's stuff I haven't seen in a long time and I'm like, oh my God. And then there's going to be a shot of a tiger. Oh my gosh, there's a shot of a tiger, you know, stuff like that. So, but not in the Billy Joel video. He didn't have tigers.
No.
Okay. He was in the Bronx or something like that, I think. So
a lot of the 80s stuff is burned into our brains. So
yeah. Yeah. I think anything that you do when you're a teenager kind of gets burned into your brain because it's still developing and stuff. So
good and bad, boys and girls. Remember that.
Yeah. So A Matter of Trust, the name of the episode. And as we said, they use the word trust a lot. I mean, the whole episode is based around characters trusting other characters or not trusting other characters or developing trust between characters or setting up a bank account. I mean, well, it was a trust, but you know what I'm saying. So
that was in one of the cutscenes. So
that'll be on the DVD, right?
Yes, exactly.
So it starts out by Oliver's on the phone with the wife of the slain police officer from first episode, season premiere.
Yep.
Where the one that Prometheus killed in the alleyway. The one that was, he was supposed to bring home the diapers and the formula for his wife. So I feel bad, you know, because she had a baby and he's not going to be around anymore. And in 30 years, this little kid is going to grow up to become a villain that haunts Prometheus. I think that's what it's a long game that they're playing here, but I think that's what they're setting up for.
Got to be careful who you take out as a villain or a good guy.
Right. So on the 35th season, that's what we're going to be dealing with. That's my prediction right now.
But for 5 years, I was in hell. And then for another 30, I was just running around.
Hey, they do the old Oliver with one arm at that point, you know, like old man Logan, but with old man Queen, I guess. So.
Dang Superman, it's his fault.
So Oliver actually tells the policeman's wife that she needs to trust him. They will find the man that did this to her husband. We had the scenes with Oliver in the hive lair. Training the team, and it really starts off with him screaming at Renee that he is he needs to be able to trust him, and you know, really pushes that, and it's true to an extent, right? I mean, a Wild Dog, true to his name, just kind of, you know, flew off the handle. He felt that he knew better, I guess, or he was chafing at the fact that Oliver wouldn't put him out there. You know, that it is kind of, I guess, one of those tropes. You know, you've got the person, you know, you've got the master and you've got the apprentice, and the student is the one that, you know, they feel like I know what I need to do now, but they're not letting me do it. You know, they're holding me back, kind of thing, which, you know, you've seen play out in a lot of different ways. But, you know, this kind of takes a little more dramatic turn, I think, because Renee not following directions directly leads to the creation of the villain that they have to fight in the episode, which I thought was kind of an interesting twist, though the creation was also very tropic. I don't know. It's like a trope. I mean, it was very, to me at least, it was very reminiscent of the Joker, creation of the Joker, with him falling in a vat of chemicals.
Tim Burton's
and stuff.
Original Batman in 1989, that one?
Yep. Yep. And just the original, I mean, and like the Joker.
Oh.
I mean, even in the comics, that was how he was created as well. That whole, you know, that's always been his origin. And so to have, you know, it's hard to have somebody fall into a vat of chemicals and I guess not draw that conclusion, especially on a comic book show, right?
Yeah. Although, you know, in this particular case, something called Stardust had to be involved in the creation of this villain. So.
let's do a little aside here and talk about the villain. So we talked about Stephen Amell and Cody Rhodes having their little Twitter wars or whatever last season, with Stephen kind of calling out Cody, and they did this whole wrestling thing where Steven was invited on to SummerSlam or WWE or whatever that is now. And they wrestled, and I think Steven even dressed in kind of a Green Arrow style outfit.
Yeah. It was kind of like that.
And I used to watch wrestling when I was 12. I mean, I was
there's
watching
some people
wrestling
that are still very into it, though.
You can watch whatever entertainment that you enjoy. If you enjoy something, that's totally cool. But for me, all I'm saying is I watched wrestling when I was 12, and I really got into it. I mean, it's you know, it actually gave me quite an adrenaline rush to see these guys doing the things they were doing. But the fact that, you know, I'm an adult now, and these people are still doing the stuff they were doing, you know, 35 years ago, is a little weird. And then for them to kind of sort of embrace it into this Arrow universe, I'll give another example. I go to a website called comicbook.com to get a lot of my daily news about what's happening in the world of comic books, comic book TV shows, comic book movies, physical comic books, also some sci-fi and stuff. And then, like, 10% of their articles are also about wrestling. I'm not sure what the weird crossover with that is. And again, I know wrestling's popular. I mean, they wouldn't have like a wrestler on the show and stuff without it. But I find this just a really bizarre crossover because it's really blurring the line, I think, between what's reality and what's make-believe. And you've got this guy. So the whole time I thought this guy's name was Cody Rhodes. But in doing my research for the episode here, I find out that really, because he's listed in the credits as Cody Runnels, and that's his real name. Cody Rhodes is his stage name. His dad is Dusty Rhodes, but Dusty Rhodes is also a stage name. Right? Dusty Runnels is the guy's real name, or Dusty may not even be his real name. And then when he's not wrestling as Cody Rhodes, he actually was wrestling as a guy named Stardust with like makeup on his face and, you know, had a whole character thing going about it. So the fact that they had a wrestler on the show acting, and again, I know wrestlers, you know, can act. The Rock is one of my favorite action stars. I really think that he's a funny guy, and you know, and I like the physicality that he brings to the roles and stuff like that. But he's also, you know, very intelligent, and I know that the stuff that happens in the wrestling piece is, well, maybe this is a spoiler. It's you know, it's scripted as well to an extent. I don't want to. I'm really afraid of having people come after me now, actually, Josh. I don't want to spoil this.
You're stating what you like and how you feel about it. It's okay. It's totally all right. And it's okay for, like you said, to enjoy the entertainment that they like.
Right.
It just seemed
too on the nose, I guess, is what I'm getting at.
You know, I don't know. I was okay with it. They were obviously incorporating a friend of Stephen Amell. This was kind of probably payback, you know, for letting him be a part of the wrestling thing, and they let him be a part of it. They probably talked about it ahead of time and everything. Mm-hmm. And he did all right. I don't know. And I also like Dwayne Johnson. I think he's a good actor, and I've seen him in a lot of awesome things. I don't know this guy did quite as good of a job acting, but for what it was, it worked just fine. So, I don't know. And plus, there were some pretty cool fight scenes that worked out really well, I think, because he was a wrestler and because of Stephen Amell's and his interactions in the past. So that was pretty cool, though.
I saw some of the wrestling moves. I saw an arm bar there when they were fighting before Oliver slashed his tendons and stuff like that. The great shot where Oliver shoots the arrow with the wire on it and yanks him up as Oliver jumps down. I thought that, so far, that is probably one of the most iconic cinematic shots that they've had in any of the seasons, in any of the episodes.
Yeah.
I thought that was a beautiful shot because it was a great stunt. It was well executed. And the fact that you can have these, what do I want to call it? The in slow motion, you can have the stunts be so, you know, just pretty in the way that the movement is and everything. You know, it's very precise in slow motion. That's got to be tough.
Yeah. Oh, and it was because of the character's, I don't know, abilities or whatever you'd call it. He was able to do that with the arrow pulling him up.
Yeah.
You wouldn't really do that with other characters. Number one is because once that happened to him, they wouldn't be able to fight back, right? But also, it seems a little bit brutal. But
Oliver was pretty brutal in this episode. He didn't kill anybody, though. I don't think. I think Renee killed a couple people. He shot a couple guys when they went into the factory the first time when they were doing the recon and stuff like that.
Yeah, so he totally shot him.
But the word's obviously gotten around on the street from the cold open piece that Green Arrow's back, and he'll take a life again if he needs to. The bad guys seem to know this now, which is cool. I always think it's a good job of the vigilante to inspire a modicum of fear in the people. You know, you don't want people to you know, think you're just some weird dude in a hockey jersey and a hockey mask or something like that.
Yeah, no. God forbid.
And we need to move along with the Evelyn Sharp thing because Wild Dog's been Wild Dog since his first shot. This week, Curtis got a really kind of seeing it up close now. His mask looks just really weird. I'm kind of unsure, like, because it's 3D in some parts, but it also seems to be just paint on his face. So I'm not sure really what that's all about. But he's got a disguise, and they still keep talking about Evelyn Sharp, right? They have to use her full name, so we know who they are talking about. And I think all she had this week was just a little domino mask, if I'm not mistaken. So
it's hard to kind of see if there was anything specific on her clothes that was different, but I agree, it looked just like her. I get it. We got the Wild Dog thing, and we kind of got his attitude, personality, his character down. Let's kind of move on to Evelyn Sharp. We already know Curtis. I've never actually been sold on the Mr. Terrific mask in any form that I've seen.
Because it's really close to the comic version of Curtis Holt, the current the African-American Mr. Terrific in DC Comics presently, right?
Yeah, very, very interesting. But I didn't think they'd actually go that route, but they did.
I was surprised they actually got Curtis's hair to be as close to his scalp, like they were able to push his afro down as much, because his hair always just seems so wild and out of control. And as Mr. Terrific, it's a very tight, his hair is just really close to his head.
Little dabble, do you?
Yeah, I think that's different, though. I don't know. Okay. I've never actually. I thought Brill Cream was like a. Isn't it like a tonic or a grease? Like
it's more of a greasy thing.
A gel or something like that. Yeah. So, getting back to talking about Derek Sampson for a second. The other issue I had, and again, like we were just saying, the choreography of the fights was really well done, and you had multiple types of fights. You had the fight before he had powers, where he was still able to fight, but he Wild Dog was able to get in a number of licks, but they were doing it kind of close quarters on the catwalk. Then he gets his powers, and there's a fight in the hallway where he also seems to have gotten kind of an increase in strength because he's really thrown Oliver around. And then you had the full kind of open combat in the warehouse space at the end. But just going back to the hospital fight, I'm pretty sure that's not how fire alarms work, CW, where you bash somebody across it and then suppressant chemicals come out of the ceiling or something. I'm not sure what they were really trying to do with that other than just make it look cool while they were fighting. My wife said something first, and I'm like, oh, they've got a Halon protection system there. And she's like, in the ER? And I'm like, yeah, sure. You know, I mean, who knows? They could have had whatever they need Halon for. The only time I've ever really know anything about that would be from Terminator 2. It's a thing.
Yeah, so. It stood out to me, too, and I know nothing about those kinds of things. Is that really? Would that put a fire out even? Whatever. I know why they were doing it. They definitely wanted them fighting in the mist, right?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and I won't deny, you know, it provides an atmosphere for it. That's kind of cool and stuff. So
it did shock me in that scene, though, that Oliver just kind of ran off when he lost and left him in the hospital to pretty much kill anybody that was in there. I guess he probably didn't, but that was a little shocking to me that I think he would have kept fighting.
Well, no, at that point he called his crew and said, hey, everybody, we need to get together, or texted, I guess, So I was also unclear. I realized it more on my second viewing that when the cop shot him three times in the back before Oliver started fighting him, I mean, like, those, he had these wounds on him the entire time. Every time he got injured or cut or shot or stabbed or whatever it was, he just didn't feel it. It wasn't that he couldn't get injured. So, you know, obviously, which is why Oliver was able to put him down at the end. That would really also suck, just to have someone like sever a bunch of your tendons, and then, you know, I thought it was pretty good. You know, he's being like a floppy little puppet there as he tried to stand up.
You got to learn that as a wrestler, see? So you got to learn when you've been defeated. So it looks like it.
So, so with the stuff that's going on with Oliver and his crew, it seems like Oliver still has a very hard time being able to put his trust in others, at least at the beginning of the episode. How do you feel he's dealt with this by the end of the episode? Do you think that this is a trait that he's learned now, that he can continue, you know, being able to trust these individuals, or are we going to be waffling back and forth on this for episodes after episode?
Nah, I mean, I think that because of the huge obvious theme in this particular episode of trust, I think that that's probably it. He'll be able to put his trust in him, which I'm totally fine with. I'd rather explore some other avenues with these characters.
Agreed.
That's kind of a weird way to describe it. I mean, he is putting actual trust in these people, but more, he's not really putting the trust in the people so much as trusting that it's going to work out because of these people's abilities. You know, now with Diggle, for example, he had pure trust. You know, they were friends, they were brothers, they were partners, they were close, right? With Thea, obviously, it's his sister. He knows her. He's known her all his life. He loves her. He trusts her. And even with Felicity, right? These people, he doesn't know. I don't know that you could trust anybody. He doesn't really know them well enough, I think, to put trust in them. But he is trusting that they're the right kind of people that can help him out.
Well, let me ask this question then. Is Oliver, and I think I do agree with you that it's hard to trust somebody that you don't know. And at this point, Oliver still does not know these people. Like, you know, even in one of the early episodes of The Flash, Team Flash would go out and go to karaoke or go have some drinks or something like that at the local bar, right? So is Oliver actually putting his trust in himself, in his ability to pick these people for the team? Is he learning to trust himself?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's more of an accurate description of what he's trusting, right? He's trusting himself that he's picked the right people and that they can do it and that it's not going to be, I don't know. I mean, I personally think because he doesn't know these people, and I think this is the huge difference between what the team is now compared to what it has been, is he doesn't know them. I mean, it's more like, let's say you ran a restaurant, you know, and you hired all your family members and they worked with you for several years and they kind of knew what to do. If you had to tell them something, you could just tell them. You didn't have to, you know, pussyfoot around the issue. And then all of a sudden,
yeah,
they
like my big fat Greek wedding, whatever that one, right?
Oh,
like that.
I have no idea. I don't even know if I've ever seen that, but maybe. And then all of a sudden they leave for some reason, you know, they quit or whatever. Yeah. So you have to hire a whole new crew and you interview them and hire people that appear qualified and that seem to know what they're doing, but you don't have that level of connection with them, that relationship with them. And I don't feel any kind of relationship with this team, not even with Curtis.
Right.
Not with Oliver and Curtis anyway. You know, Felicity and Curtis, and sure. I think there was a nice scene where they were talking about Rory. That was a nice little scene.
Right.
You know? But he doesn't have that with them, and so that is the huge difference. And so I don't think you can actually trust these people. Would he trust Wild Dog with his life? I don't think he would.
Well, and he's not putting the time in to try to learn. I mean, not that he has the time. I mean, he's 50% of his time is being the mayor and 50% of his time is being Green Arrow. I mean, yeah. When does he
trust
sleep?
Me on this one, Oliver, you're stretching yourself too thin. I take my word for it.
Yeah. So, I agree with you. There's a lot of, there are a lot of issues that I still think need to be worked out. But they may not really continue addressing this. There may be allusions back to this in future episodes, but I too would rather see them explore some other stuff because I feel like they've kind of done the due diligence on this piece of it to be able to move the characters forward to the, you know,
for
whatever
sure.
the next step
sure.
is.
He's got to take this first step before he can trust them fully.
Right. So Oliver, as you mentioned, Oliver does trust his sister. His sister seems to have some trust issues. She has been putting her trust in the media. And my note is like, seriously, how does she not see that coming? Thea's relatively savvy. We've seen her, she's smart. She's been around and stuff. And the fact that she would take this information to a reporter and think that the reporter was actually going to do the right thing with it is almost ludicrous.
I see what you're saying. And I think she was she should be smarter than that. Absolutely. But I think she made a bad judgment call. I think she trusted this particular woman because of how this woman played her, right? Like she said at the end.
Yeah.
Thea was so embarrassed and upset with herself about making this mistake in the first place, without consulting Oliver anyway, that I think it was almost kind of a impulsive, like, I got to do anything to take care of this. Oh my gosh, it seems like this lady is going to take care of this for me and help me out a little bit. Oh, whew, good. So, I mean, I've been there, like when you're kind of backed up against a wall and you're like, what am I going to do? I think I see an out that might actually work. And then it kind of blows up in your face, So.
Right, right.
I hate when that happens.
Which reminds me, I need to ask you, have you been backing up your computer?
Oh, jeez.
Sorry, don't
actually,
mean that.
No, that's a good thing. Don't stop asking me that.
Reopen
actually,
old wounds
to,
there.
I do need to do that very soon.
So, that's a good point. I can agree with that. I mean, there are those times where, again, you maybe you're not trusting in yourself. And that doubt is there, and that colors your interactions with others.
Because when you don't trust yourself, you need some kind of social connection with somebody to help you gain that confidence back, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, and when you meet somebody like this stupid reporter that has that confidence and that personality, you just want to like, okay, all right, nice, this will work. Oh my gosh, I got a new friend.
Co-workers, yay! It's like, no.
Yeah, that's true.
So, Thea went from being, particularly naive in this case to really kind of turn it into kind of a badass at the end where it's like, kind of being very snippy with the reporter and, saying, tell a lie. It's like, no.
Oh, not only. She like threatened her.
Well, yeah. And that's what I was going to get to then. So not only was she being snippy and stuff like that, then she like, threatens her. So that will not be good. That's going to come back to bite somebody, I think, as well in a future episode, potentially.
Think so? I think it might be okay. I think it might actually help.
Something's going to happen. The reporter's going to fall in some kind of vat of chemical, and that will be a new villain or something like that coming up.
Yep, that's her. That's going to be
six
her.
Weeks. So
the journalist.
I'm now thinking up all sorts of taglines for this particular villain. So I'm gonna
all right,
skip.
Well.
We're gonna go over this and we're gonna move on to Felicity, who is having trust issues. Again, she has not really been believing or trusting in herself that she did the right thing in realigning the missile from landing in Monument Point and killing millions of people to having it at Haven Rock and only killing like thousands of people. Yeah.
Yeah. I've never been in this situation, but I can say that probably that is something no matter what anybody says or does or tells me, that is probably something I would never get over.
Well, they talk about people who've been in war, or police officers that have had to, kill somebody in the line of duty. And, a lot of those people, like just taking one life, can mess people up. So, I mean, yeah, if you're if you've pretty much wiped out an entire town, that's...
It's just one town, though, so...
If it's just one town, that's true. Tell that to Rory's family. But Felicity also needs to be able to trust that she can tell Rory about this and that the Ragman, you know, in him won't kill her, you know, for her or punish her for her sins or whatever. But we don't actually get... This is the one... I think this is the one storyline with kind of the trust issues here that we don't actually get a resolution to, because she tells him in her own way, right? You know, she's very nervous about it. She's very upset, obviously. And he didn't even say anything. He just walks away, which I was like, you know, I mean, I think it's intended to be like, oh, that's not good. He's not taking this well. But what do you think is... what do you think he's thinking about at that point?
I think he's thinking, hey, next week's my big episode when they spotlight me. No, probably not.
It's possible.
Yeah, it is possible. But no, what do I think? I mean, I think he's understandably upset. He's disturbed. I mean, first of all, he put everything he had last week into killing the people he thought was responsible. I mean, this guy became a villain to act out revenge on the people he thought responsible for killing his family and his entire town.
Yeah.
You know, and he got over that. But if he had said, oh man, Felicity, that is rough. Well, I totally understand. And you know, I'm with you. That would not have been within his character at all. I mean, this is going to hit him hard. And we talked about this last week, what he was going to do or how he was going to react when he found that out. So, I think it's going to take at least one episode to resolve this particular dilemma.
Yeah, I hope that they don't hold on. I hope that they continue this earlier rather than later. I'd like them to move on to this. I was really surprised that Felicity was able to admit this to him this early on. I thought that it would be at least another episode before she kind of had the courage to do that. But I guess they, you know, they didn't want to let that linger too much longer.
No. Well, Felicity should have, you know, taken him out to dinner or get a lunch or something and told him in a different way than just, hey, can I tell you something real quick?
Yeah, I know you're on your way out, but hey, just real quick. So, so Oliver also has not only trust with his team, his superhero team, but he's also trust issues with his City Hall team. And I thought it was really interesting because the press conference that he gives, he talks about how he trusts his team, and this is the mayor speaking, but it was very obvious that it was you know, had a double meaning, because he was also speaking to the members of the Arrow team.
Well, he's busy. He's got double duty, so anytime that he can overlap those things to get, you know, kill two birds with one stone, that's he tries to do that.
Oh, that just reminds me, we've had two canaries die on the show, Josh.
Oh, dang it.
Man. All right. And then the final, thanks for bringing it down. the final trust issue person here is Diggle. So he doesn't seem to really, well, trust himself or trust his own eyes. We've got Deadshot showing up. I went into the kitchen to grab a snack when he came on, and I missed him explaining like how he's back, and I come back over, I'm like, wait, how was he back? And they're like, she just explained it. I'll tell you later. And I'm like, what? So what is going on here? What do you think was going on here?
Well, my first thought was Flashpoint. And that's why, yeah, I'm like, well, it's gotta be Flashpoint. That's why they showed Barry at the beginning, right? It's because, yep. Now look at this. He's back. But
yay. I was excited. I mean, no, I was really excited was. Too, I thought that was great. Yeah.
Yeah. I like that character. You know, it seems like Diggle's got some serious trauma here from killing his brother, and going back in the army did not help it at all.
Nope.
He's got to find a way to forgive himself for making that decision, which I, you know, I still believe. We talked about this at the end of last season. I still believe it was the right decision. He didn't really have a choice. It was for the greater good. Same reason Felicity aimed the nuke. and Haven Rock.
Same reason Oliver finally killed Damian Dark.
It was all the decisions
that the characters had to make. It's really interesting how that always happens in the towards the season finales of these episodes. But
it's Star City.
So was this really? So basically, what you're saying, this is kind of like a manifestation of Diggle's subconsciousness. So he was really hallucinating Deadshot.
That's what it appears to be. I don't know really what else it could be. I certainly don't know who would do that to him, you know, try to make him think he was seeing Deadshot. I don't know what purpose that would possibly serve. So, I think that's what was happening.
Because there, when Deadshot was sitting in his bunk playing solitaire, there were pictures all over the wall of his family. Well, especially of his daughter. I don't remember if there were ones of his wife. And then when Lila came back, this time she was allowed to come to the cell. So I don't know, maybe she said that, you know, she was with Argus now or something. I don't know why she had to go to the little call box to begin with at the beginning of the episode, and then she could come directly to a cell. Also,
maybe she wasn't really there either. Nah.
No, she would. Yeah, she was. I mean, that's a great idea, because it's like, I just questioned that for a second. But no, she then comes to Oliver at the end and says that he's in prison. Now, that still doesn't necessarily mean that she wasn't there. Or that she was there, because she could have known that he was in prison in any number of ways, right?
Sure.
That's actually an interesting theory. I'm going to believe that she actually was there.
I think she was, too.
His cell was huge, by the way. I don't think cells are quite that big. I'm sure that was TV. That was, you know, a TV cell. But when we saw, when he turned around, you know, to indicate that he was talking to Deadshot earlier, there was nothing on the wall, you know, obviously the bed hadn't been slept in or anything like that. So, I feel like it was, you know, kind of a hallucination that he was, dealing with. So, and it looks like next week we're going to be doing Prison Break on Arrow.
Oh, okay. So they bring back Captain Cold for that.
That would be awesome if Captain Cold and Heatwave had a quick cameo in the show before they bust, or maybe they come back and help him bust John out of jail or something like that. I don't know.
I won't probably talk about this next week, but I'm not really sure what the purpose right now of breaking him out of jail is.
It seems very impulsive for Lila. She's a smart individual. I mean, she's the head of Argus now, and she's saying she wants to break her husband out of a military prison.
Why not find some evidence first? You know, why not try to get together what you need to? Breaking him out is going to make him look more guilty.
Right.
He's going to be in trouble for that. I don't know what the purpose of this is.
Yeah.
But I guess, like I said, next week we'll find out more.
Yeah. And then we had the flashbacks where there was not a lot, not as much, I guess, was accomplished. But I believe the purpose of the flashbacks this week was to make you, the viewer, feel more comfortable that Oliver allowing these individuals to get killed by the Bratva last week, like, you should be okay with that because they were not good people.
And that's part of it. And I also think to you know, it's like the lesson of the story, and Oliver remembers in his flashbacks, the lesson is that sometimes you need to trust when you don't know all the information.
And we learn the rules of the Bratva. The first rule of the Bratva is to trust the Bratva. And then the second rule of the Bratva is to trust the Bratva. So I also thought the knives suspiciously looked like the ones that could kill Vandal Savage from Legends of Tomorrow. I don't know if they're reusing props or not.
They had a sale on eBay on those knives, so...
Six for one.
Yeah.
So, and then you had a question about the DA that showed up in here, who was pissed royally much.
Well, we don't know much about him, but he just seems like a suspicious character. I'm not sure what's going on there. He even had mentioned some stuff like had known Oliver in the past, and Oliver stole his girlfriend, and I don't hold grudges much.
So. Well, he's not the DA we want, but he's the DA we need, I believe.
Okay. We'll see. I don't know. Interesting. I think he's going to come back to haunt him somewhere.
So I think they are trying to set it up to make you think that maybe this guy is Prometheus. But comic book fans will probably recognize the name Adrian Chase, because that's the name of the DA. And I'll leave it at that, because we're going to be coming back to him, if not next week, the week after, I believe. So,
all right.
We talked about it a little bit during our summer specials, so you guys could go back and listen to that and find a little more information out. One final thing I wanted to touch on before we go away, and we talked a little bit about this, I think, in the season premiere. Mark Guggenheim has talked about there are a number of characters, and I think I've seen the list now. I think it's like six characters that have previously died on the show. Not just characters that are no longer on the series, but like dead characters will be coming back for the 100th episode in five episodes here, because this was the 95th episode. And he is quoted as saying, "No flashpoint, no flashbacks," very much like the when Oliver and Felicity got married last season. And he said, "Not a dream, not a flashback, not a hoax," which "not a hoax" was kind of misleading, because it was a wedding, kind but of it was a fake wedding. So,
yeah.
So, okay. No flashpoint, meaning it's not an alternate timeline or something that Barry did when he changed the world. So these characters are not alive because of Barry. No flashbacks means that, you know, if we're seeing a character that's been dead on the show, it's not because we are, you know, going back and they're going to be in Russia or something like that. So I kind of had a crazy theory this week. Well, first off, obviously, he only says no flashpoint, no flashbacks. So it could be a dream. This week, we saw a character that, you know, has supposedly died on the show a season or two ago. So it could be a hallucination. Could be, you know, something on a videotape that the character's watching present day, right? That's not necessarily a flashback, because it's happening now. It's just they're watching something that was recorded previously. But since the 100th episode is going to be the crossover episode, and they've teased that they're doing the invasion storyline with the Dominators, which are these alien creatures and stuff like this. Now, this is not part of the original Invasion comic book, I don't believe, because I haven't read it in a while. So I'm planning on doing that before the crossover. But I'm thinking that maybe the Dominators, these aliens, have cloned people Oliver knew for whatever reason. And either that, or they are disguised as these people in order to infiltrate and invade. And they just don't know that these people are dead, because they're getting television signals from 5 years ago or something like that, you know, because of space and all that.
Okay. Interesting.
So I want to throw
those
out
are all
there
good
because,
theories.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So
now you got, and you said hallucinations, you know, it could be stardust, could be vertigo, could be, you know, so there's always those options.
Oh yeah, that's right. There was mention of vertigo this week too. So mm-hmm. I forgot about that. So yeah. So anyway, you know, a lot of cool stuff going on. I thought this was an okay episode. I didn't like it as much as the previous episodes, but it's you know, it's moving along things. I'd like to get to some of the bigger issues. Like, I'd like to see more stuff with Tobias Church and Prometheus. Though they will probably draw some of that stuff out for, you know, much longer, for, you know, more of the season. So
yeah,
we'll have plenty of time for that. Any feedback this week you want to mention?
Hey, we'll just do some real quick feedbacks. They were just short comments anyway, but I wanted to share them with them. They were good. Josh sent us an email, said, Arrow's first three episodes of season five have been my favorite since season one. They've really gone back to their roots, and I love it. Yeah, it seems like that's a pretty common feeling about this, and I agree. I'm enjoying season five so far.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. Paul was on Facebook, and he said the best part about season five so far, Oliver's wig in the flashbacks looks 100,000 times better.
That is absolutely true. If I hadn't mentioned it on the podcast, I totally agree with that. I think that was one of the first things I said after the premiere episode, whether it was to you or to my coworkers or here on the podcast.
So. I told him. I responded back to him. I said, yep, they nailed it. And I don't mean they actually, you know, got it right. I mean that when he was in Russia, the Bratva nailed his hair to his head. So,
ouch.
I know. And then Derek on Facebook, he said he'll always miss the season 4 team, but it was great to see the new team in action and costumes this week. Especially geeked out seeing Mr. Terrific's tea mask. So I guess Derek liked that. He did feel sad to see them pursuing a fellow Derek, though. Oh, yeah. Sorry, Derek. You know, they can't feel good. Just ask Jay. He's got that experience with on Flash. But
yeah.
Us Dereks have to stick together. He was just trying to sell happiness to the good folks of Star City. Nobody was getting hurt. Well, I don't know about that. But.
Make Star City great again. I understand, Derek. I know how it is. So
so thanks to everybody that responded. We love hearing from you. So keep those comments coming on Twitter, Facebook, and email.
So a few references from the show. Felicity pulls out some really deep quote here. Heavy is the head that wears the crown from, I'm pretty sure that's from Shakespeare's King Henry IV, or as she points out, maybe it was Tupac. Derek, Sampson, channels his inner Gary Busey, from Lethal Weapon 1 as he holds the lighter under his arm. Who played it better, Sampson or Busey?
I'm going to say Busey.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I will have to agree with you there.
Besides, that was Mr. Joshua, right? So,
you know. Of course it was Mr. Joshua. Yeah. You would have to definitely go for that, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
So, all right. Agreed. We learned from Curtis that his fair play jacket, which I was like, how are they going to explain this? I thought this actually was amusing and interesting. Again, also with the whole meta critique of wrestling, with having Cody Rhodes on the show. He says the fair play jacket comes from Mr. Terrific, aka Terry Sloan, who was in this universe a TV wrestler that used the slogan fair play. And for comic fans, Terry Sloan was the name of the original Mr. Terrific, not Mr. Fantastic. The Mr. Terrific from the Justice Society, who debuted back in 1942, I believe. So, and then a great little quip by Oliver. I thought this was also another really great, just kind of nudge, wink, wink sort of thing. When they're in the elevator going down to the Arrow Cave, so he can show the kids the, you know, this is where mom and dad hang out normally. And Felicity says, what kind of, or no, I guess it was Evelyn says, what kind of vigilante wears a hockey mask? And Oliver's like, I think it's cool. So to me, I'm sure this is exactly what it was. But Casey Jones was played by Stephen Amell in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 during the off season. Casey Jones wears a hockey mask. So I'm assuming that was a little nudge towards that. And Casey Jones is kind of a vigilante character in that. Interesting fact, the Casey Jones character actually predates the Wild Dog character by about 2 years. Originally, Casey Jones originally premiered in 1985 in a Raphael Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle one-shot, and Wild Dog didn't show up until close to the end of 1987.
Oh, there you go.
So a lot of cool stuff. That's all we've got for this week, but please join us next week for another hopefully really interesting episode of Arrow, and definitely some really good commentary here on Green Justice.
And we hope you guys enjoyed this episode, and we want to hear from you on iTunes especially. So pop on over on iTunes, give us a quick review, and share with everybody why you like Green Justice, so they can hear us too. We want to share it with everybody. You can contact us directly, though. Send us some messages like Josh, Paul, Derek, and other people have done. Email is greenjustice@randomchatter.com. Twitter is @greenjusticepod. And our Facebook page is facebook.com/greenjusticepodcast.
And if we ever read those too quickly for you, you can always find us at randomchatter.com. Just go to the show notes, and we've got all the links right there in the show notes for you. You can also check out the other shows Josh and I host, including Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Case Files, and Scarlet Velocity, a Flash podcast. Like I said, on randomchatter.com. All shows can be found in the iTunes Store and through Stitcher for Android or iOS. And, of course, remember, if you guys are enjoying the podcast, please share us with your friends. I heard again today from a bunch of people that said, hey, we really love listening to you guys on the show. And I got to tell you, Josh, that just makes it so much more fun for me to do the shows, to know that people, you know, want to listen to us. Like, if our show is late, people, you know, email us and say, hey, did you guys forget to post the show? And we're like, shut up. We know what we're doing. But
is that how you respond? No. Is that your typical response?
If I know the person, usually so. Yeah. But yeah, tell your friends about us. You know, it's again, the people I've talked to said they like watching the shows, and then they like listening to you and I talk about it. So I think that's great. And I'm sure there are a lot of other people that are listening to other Arrow podcasts that, you know, might enjoy listening to this one as well. So remember, if you don't keep listening, though, you have failed the city.
This podcast is not endorsed by Warner Brothers Television or DC Entertainment. The official website for Arrow can be found at www.cwtv.com. Green Arrow, Arrow, and related elements are copyright DC Entertainment and Warner Brothers Television.